Okay, so you've brought us some really interesting stuff this time around.
Yeah.
All about work.
Yeah, the world of work.
How it all functions. I like to think of this deep dive as like, kind of giving people the shortcut.
Right.
You don't have to read through all these long articles and
We
books.
took it to get the highlights, yeah.
Yeah, we do it for you. So, have you ever kind of sat there and thought like, wait, why do I get paid the way I do? Or like what are the big things out there that are shaping my choices even, my
Yeah.
career options?
It's fascinating stuff. I mean, the sources that you've brought
Yeah, it's a lot.
really touch on some big foundational elements of the labor market. I
Yeah.
mean, we're talking everything from, how people get paid, what motivates them
Right.
beyond just money, the structures of the economy that create the landscape of jobs that are even available. It's a huge system. But I think by looking at these kind of key areas, we can start to get a feel for how it all works together.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so let's jump into it. So, something we all experience, right? Getting paid. The sources that you've given me actually talk about a bunch of different ways that people get compensated. Time rate pay, which is, I think, the one that most people think of.
Yeah, that's the classic hourly wage.
Yeah, just paid by the hour. But I thought it was really interesting. They kind of pointed out how this could unintentionally reward, like, just showing up. Rather than, your actual output. Especially if it's a job that's like hard to really quantify what you're producing,
Yeah, you make a good point. I mean, from the worker's perspective, time rate pay is all about stability, predictability. It's steady. But for the employer, it's not always clear that it's driving, the best productivity. And that's where you start to see these other models come in.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like piece rate pay, where your earnings are directly tied to how much you produce.
Well, yeah.
That can be a real motivator to boost output. But then the question becomes, at what cost?
Yeah.
Right? Are people going to start prioritizing speed over quality?
Right.
Potentially push themselves too hard.
Yeah. I guess that's the balancing act there. What about overtime pay?
Yeah, overtime pay. So that's the extra compensation you get for putting in those longer hours.
Right.
I mean, it can be a great incentive. Sometimes it's just necessary to get the job done, but again, there's that trade-off. What about fatigue? Burnout? That short-term gain of extra money might lead to longer-term issues with well-being, even reduced productivity in the long run. Something to think about.
Okay. So we've got time rate, piece rate, overtime. Oh, what about, I think one of the sources mentioned commission-based pay.
Oh, yeah. Commission-based pay. That's huge in sales, right? Your earnings are directly tied to how much you sell. And that can be a really powerful motivator. Your success becomes the company's success. But I mean, your source has probably touched on this. It can create a very competitive environment, maybe even less collaboration among colleagues.
You're kind of you're all kind of fighting for the same slice of the pie. Okay, so one more. Bonuses.
Bonuses.
These are like those extra rewards, right?
Yeah, hitting targets, staying with a company for a certain amount of time. They can definitely boost morale, help with loyalty. But again, that competitive aspect that we talked about with commissions can creep in here, especially if it's not clear how those bonuses are awarded or if people feel like the system's unfair.
So even just how you get paid, there's a lot more to it than you might think.
Oh yeah, there are a lot of factors at play and potential consequences.
Absolutely.
It's not just the number on the paycheck.
Okay, so it's not just about the money. What were those non-wage factors?
Yeah, the non-wage factors. This is where it gets really interesting, I think. This is about going beyond the purely monetary and considering all the things that really impact your experience and how motivated you are at work.
So what are some of those?
Well, one of the big ones, I think, is job satisfaction. If you actually enjoy what you're doing, you're naturally going to be more engaged, more productive.
Absolutely.
And then there's job security, knowing that your job is stable, whether it's permanent or temporary. I mean, that can make a huge difference to your stress levels, your overall well-being,
Absolutely.
working conditions.
Okay, so that's a big one.
Yeah, that's the whole package.
Yeah.
You know, the actual physical space where you work, the hours, health and safety measures, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
I mean, it impacts your day-to-day life, but also your long-term health.
Yeah, for sure.
Your career prospects.
Oh, okay.
Knowing that there's a path for you to grow in the company.
Yeah.
Get promoted, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
That can be a huge driver for a lot of people.
Well, I think so. What about holidays and pensions?
Right. So paid time off, that's essential for rest and recharging.
Right.
And pensions, you know, that security of knowing you've got something for retirement.
Right.
These are things that are becoming more and more seen as just, you know, part of a fair deal for workers.
Right. They're not just like extras anymore.
Exactly.
Okay, so what about fringe benefits? I think one of the articles mentioned that.
Right, the perks.
Yeah.
Health insurance, housing allowances, maybe help with transport costs.
Yeah.
Those can have a real impact on your overall quality of life. You know, it's not just about the money you take home. It's how that money can actually support you.
Right.
And what's interesting, too, is, you know, firm reputation and size, that can come into play as well.
Okay.
You know, companies that have a good reputation.
Right.
They can attract better talent.
Yeah.
People feel proud to work there.
Right.
And the size of a company can affect the culture.
Right.
You know, whether there are opportunities to move up and stuff.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so last one. Location and travel time.
Oh, that's huge.
Yeah.
For work-life balance.
Yeah.
You know, a long commute can really take away from even a well-paid job.
For sure.
It can just add so much stress to your life.
Yeah, it makes you really think about what's important to you in a job.
It really does.
Yeah, it's an individual thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so let's zoom out a little.
Okay.
Talk about the big picture, like the forces that shape the whole labor market.
Right.
One of the sources talked about this idea of demand for labor and supply of labor.
Uh-huh.
It's like economics 101.
Mm-hmm.
But understanding how these interact is actually really important.
No, absolutely.
So like if there's a high demand for a product, you know, and people are really good at making that product.
Right.
Then the demand for labor for the people to make that product goes up.
Exactly.
And the supply of labor.
Yeah, well, that's influenced by who has the right skills and qualifications.
Right.
You know, what kind of training is available.
Yeah.
How attractive are the working conditions. Even migration patterns can affect the supply of labor.
Right, because that's how many people are available to do the work.
Exactly.
Okay. So one of the sources talked about wage elasticity.
Oh, wage elasticity. Now, this is where it gets really fascinating.
Okay.
So how sensitive are wages to changes in supply and demand?
Okay.
You know, for jobs that don't require a ton of skill, the supply of labor is usually pretty elastic,
okay.
Meaning there are a lot of people who could do the job. So even if demand goes up, wages might not change that much.
Right.
Because there are always plenty of people willing to work for that wage.
Right. Okay.
But in those specialized fields,
yeah,
where there aren't as many people with the right skills,
right,
that's an inelastic supply.
Okay.
And there, if the demand goes up, wages can really skyrocket.
Okay.
Because there just aren't enough qualified people to fill the roles.
Yeah, okay. So like it's all about how rare your skills are, basically.
It's a big factor, yeah. I mean, you see this all the time in different industries.
Yeah.
You know, think about like a surgeon.
Right.
A highly specialized surgeon.
Right.
They can command a huge salary,
right,
compared to someone in an entry-level retail job.
Right, because it takes a lot longer to become a surgeon.
Exactly.
There are a lot fewer of them.
Right. The supply and demand dynamics are totally different.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so the government, they also play a role,
right?
And I think the source has talked about two main areas.
Uh-huh.
National minimum wage.
Right.
And tax policies.
Yep.
So the minimum wage, that's about, you know, protecting workers,
mm-hmm,
making sure that everyone's getting paid at least a certain amount.
Right. Setting that floor.
Yeah.
Below which no one can fall.
Right. But I guess there's a debate about whether that could lead to fewer jobs, right?
Yeah. That's the concern.
Yeah.
If businesses have to pay more,
right,
might they hire fewer people?
Right.
Leading to higher unemployment.
Right. It's like a balancing act.
It's a tough one.
Yeah. Okay. So what about tax policies?
Right. Well, taxes, that's about how much you actually take home.
Right.
Your net earnings after all the deductions.
Right.
Higher taxes might mean more money for public services.
Yeah.
But it could also make, you know, certain jobs or even entire countries,
right,
less attractive to workers.
Right. Yeah, that's a really interesting one. Okay, so let's talk about power dynamics a little bit, within the labor market. The sources talked about these different market structures,
right?
Which I guess like really influence how much power a worker has to get better conditions.
Yeah.
So in a competitive labor market, mm-hmm. where you have lots of employers and lots of workers,
yeah.
wages are pretty much set by supply and demand.
Right. Classic market forces.
Yeah.
Lots of buyers, lots of sellers.
Right. But then you have this thing called a monopsony.
Ah, monopsony. This is a really interesting one.
Yeah.
This is where you basically have one major employer in a particular area or industry.
Okay, so they're like the only game in town.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So they have a lot of power to set wages.
Okay.
And they can keep those wages lower than they would be in a more competitive market because workers don't have a lot of other options.
Yeah. That makes sense. So, like, if you live in a small town.
Yeah.
And there's only one factory.
Exactly.
Right. And you need a job.
Yeah. You don't have a lot of choices.
Yeah. You don't have a lot of bargaining power.
Right. And that's where you see concerns about exploitation potentially arise.
Right.
You know, are workers being paid fairly for the value they're creating for the company?
Right.
It's a complex issue.
Yeah.
But monopsonies definitely raise those kinds of questions.
Right. So, okay. Then we have trade unions.
Trade unions.
These are groups of workers.
Right. They come together.
Yeah.
To bargain collectively.
Yeah.
For better wages, benefits, working conditions.
Right. So they're like a counterweight to the power of the employer.
Exactly.
Okay. And then there's this thing called a bilateral monopoly.
Ah, bilateral monopoly. That's the showdown. You've got a single powerful employer facing off against a single strong union.
Okay.
So it's a real negotiation battle.
Right.
The outcome, you know, the wages and conditions, they really depend on the bargaining skills of both sides.
Yeah.
It can get pretty intense.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah. But it's fascinating to see that dynamic play out.
So the structure of the market mm-hmm. really determines how much power the workers have.
It really does.
Yeah. Okay, so let's shift gears a little bit and talk about these different economic sectors.
Okay.
So the SOPS has kind of divided the economy into these four main sectors.
Right.
Primary sector.
Yeah, the foundation.
Yeah.
That's all about extracting raw materials.
Okay.
Farming, fishing, mining, you know, getting those resources out of the earth.
Okay, so yeah, that's like the most basic level.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you've got the secondary sector.
Yeah.
Which is all about manufacturing and construction.
Okay, so they're taking those raw materials.
Right.
And making stuff.
Exactly.
Okay.
Turning those raw materials into usable products.
Okay.
So, you know, think of factories.
Right.
Building houses, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's the secondary sector.
Okay, then we have the tertiary sector.
Ah, the tertiary sector. Now, this is the big one. This is all about services.
Oh, okay.
Everything from retail and hospitality to healthcare, education, you know, the things that people do for each other.
Right.
Rather than producing physical goods.
Yeah, okay.
It's a huge part of modern economies.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
And then lastly, we have the quaternary sector.
The quaternary sector.
Okay.
Now, this is the knowledge and information-based stuff.
Okay.
You know, think technology, research, consulting, those kind of high-level knowledge industries, that's the quaternary sector.
Okay, so it's like the kind of stuff that's not, you're not really making a physical thing.
Exactly.
It's more like ideas.
Right.
Okay.
It's about generating and processing information.
So why is it important to like divide it up like that?
Well, if you think about it, I mean, the types of jobs you find.
Yeah.
The skills that are in demand.
Right.
Even the typical wages, they can be really different across those different sectors.
Right.
You know, the quaternary sector, it often needs really specialized skills.
Right.
So people in those jobs, they might earn higher salaries.
Right.
Whereas the primary sector,
yeah.
you know, more physical labor.
Yeah.
It can be more vulnerable to changes in, say, commodity prices.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's about understanding the whole landscape.
It gives you context.
Yeah.
It helps you see the bigger picture of the economy.
Yeah. Okay. So one more thing that the sources talked about was this concept of the division of labor and specialization, which is, it's all about how we organize work.
Right.
So essentially you're taking these big complex tasks
mm-hmm.
and you're breaking them down into smaller parts.
Smaller, more manageable chunks.
Yeah.
And often each worker then specializes in just one of those parts.
Right. Okay. And so I guess the advantages are you get more efficient.
Oh, absolutely.
You get more output overall.
Yeah.
Because people become really good at their one specific thing.
Right. That's the key.
Yeah.
You develop expertise through repetition.
Right.
And you save time by not having to constantly switch between different tasks.
Right.
You know, the classic example is the assembly line.
Oh, right.
Each worker focused on their specific step.
Yeah.
It's much faster and more efficient than having one person try to build the whole thing from start to finish.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but are there any downsides to this kind of specialization?
Yeah, there are some potential drawbacks to consider.
Okay.
I mean, one of the big ones is boredom.
Okay.
You know, doing the same repetitive task over and over
right.
can get pretty monotonous.
Yeah.
Can lead to a lack of engagement for workers.
Right.
There's also the risk of over-dependence.
Okay.
You know, if one key worker gets sick.
Right.
Or a piece of specialized equipment breaks down.
Right.
The whole process can grind to a halt.
Right, because no one else knows how to do that one thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I guess you lose a bit of flexibility too, right?
Yeah, that's another point. If everyone's so specialized,
right.
they can't easily step in and do something else when you need them to.
Right. I guess in your own work, have you ever noticed these things?
I think in a lot of modern industries, you know, knowledge-based industries,
yeah.
you see a lot of specialization.
Yeah.
It allows for real deep expertise.
Right.
But sometimes it can lead to communication problems.
Yes.
You know, people in different teams,
yeah.
they might not fully understand what other teams are doing.
Right.
So you gain efficiency, but maybe lose a bit of the bigger picture.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so last topic.
Okay.
Motivation in the workplace.
Oh, yeah. This is a big one.
Yeah, I think all the sources talked about this.
So, yeah.
You know, different theories about what actually motivates people at work.
Right.
So first up, Taylor's scientific management.
Taylorism.
Okay.
This is the classic idea that money is the main motivator.
Okay.
You know, analyze the work scientifically. Optimize the processes.
Right.
And then use piece rate pay.
Right.
To encourage people to produce as much as possible.
Okay, so it's all about efficiency.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Taylorism really shaped industrial practices.
Right.
You know, focusing on maximizing production.
Right.
But, you know, a lot of people criticize it for not really taking into account the human element of work.
Right. It's a little bit cold and calculating.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So what's next?
Well, then you have Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Okay.
This is a much broader view of motivation.
Okay.
It says, you know, it's not just about money.
Right.
People have all these different needs.
Okay.
You know, starting with basic ones like food and shelter.
Yeah, of course.
Then safety.
Yeah.
Belonging. Feeling like you're part of a group.
Right.
Esteem.
Okay.
Feeling good about yourself.
Right.
And then at the top, self-actualization.
Okay.
Reaching your full potential.
Right.
So Maslow said you can't really focus on those higher level needs.
Okay.
Until the lower ones are met.
Right. So like if you're worried about where your next meal's coming from.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. You're not going to be thinking about self-actualization.
Right. You're not going to be too worried about your career advancement.
Right.
If you're feeling unsafe.
Yeah.
So it's a more holistic view of what motivates us.
Yeah. Okay. So, and then there was one more, right?
Yeah. There's one more big theory.
Yeah.
Herzberg's two-factor theory.
Okay.
And this one, it divides the things that affect us at work into two categories.
Okay.
Motivators.
Okay.
And hygiene factors.
Okay.
So motivators, those are the things that really get you going.
Okay.
You know, a sense of achievement.
Yeah.
Recognition for your work.
Right.
The work itself being interesting and challenging.
Yeah, okay.
Responsibility, opportunities to advance.
Right.
All that good stuff.
Yeah, okay.
And those lead to job satisfaction.
Right, if you have those things.
Right, like hygiene factors, on the other hand.
Okay.
These are kind of the basics.
Right.
Company policies,
okay.
How you're supervised, your yeah. working conditions.
Right.
Salary, relationships with colleagues.
Okay.
All that stuff.
Yeah.
And if those things are bad,
yeah.
they can lead to dissatisfaction.
Okay.
But even if they're good,
yeah.
they don't necessarily make you feel motivated.
Yeah.
They just prevent you from being unhappy.
Okay.
So it's kind of like the absence of bad versus the presence of good.
Oh, okay.
Right.
That's interesting. So you can have a job with a good salary and nice working conditions,
mm-hmm.
but still not feel motivated.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So what do you think about all this? Like, which of these theories resonates with you the most?
I think they all have something to offer.
Yeah.
I mean, Taylor, he was really on to something with the idea of efficiency. But we can't forget the human side of the equation.
Right.
And that's where Maslow and Hertzberg come in.
Yeah.
You know, highlighting those higher level needs, the importance of intrinsic motivation.
Yeah.
I think it's about finding a balance.
Right.
You know, making sure those basic hygiene factors are in place.
Yeah.
But also creating an environment where people can feel challenged and rewarded and truly motivated.
Yeah.
It's about creating a workplace where people can thrive.
Absolutely.
And that benefits everyone in the long run.
Yeah. So as we wrap up this deep dive into the world of work, I mean, we covered so much.
A lot of ground.
Yeah, from like the nuts and bolts of how we get paid to the bigger forces that shape the economy.
The psychology of work.
Yeah, the psychology of work.
It's all connected.
Yeah, and it's all influencing each other all the time.
Absolutely. It's a dynamic system.
So if you had to pick like one thing, that's the most important for a healthy and productive labor market.
That's a tough one. I think it comes back to that idea of balance.
Okay.
You know, balance between the needs of employers and the needs of workers.
Right.
Balance between efficiency and well-being.
Right.
Balance between individual goals and collective goals.
Yeah.
Finding that sweet spot.
Yeah.
That's where the magic happens.
Like a constant, it's a constant process.
It is.
Yeah. So hopefully this deep dive has given you some things to think about.
Given you some tools.
Yeah, to kind of understand this complex world a little better.
To ask the right questions.
Yeah, I think that's what's so important.
Absolutely.
Thanks for taking the time to deep dive with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We'll see you next time.
See you.